Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. We are at the compound today. I'm going to be speaking this afternoon at the Phoenix Startup Week, and then I'm catching a flight to Indianapolis for the Combine. So I'm at the Combine on my mind today. I'm at the compound. We have the alligators, and we have the moat, and we have drawbridges and armed guards and all that stuff. No, we don't. We're just doing our show from where else? From the home office today, which is fine. We have Pedro Gomez coming up. I saw Pedro yesterday at the baseball managers and general managers meetings. Pedro just, I don't know who does his tailoring, but gosh, it's good. It's just, you walk in and he looks like a GQ guy. There's no other way to put it. Maybe Vanity Fair even. He's stepped his game up. And I did not have my game really going like Pedro yesterday, but it was good to see him at the general manager and managers meetings, all of them at the Biltmore. So here's the thing. I want to talk to Pedro about, as spring training gets going and all these teams here in the Valley that are now out there, and the Diamondbacks, obviously, will go heavy into the Diamondbacks, and Pedro will be with us every week again for the baseball season, because that's what we do with Pedro. It's great having him. So Pedro in a few minutes. Jerry Palm, Bracketology with CBS Sports. And Jerry, I want to talk to him about U of A. I may even work in a Grand Canyon question with Jerry Palm. I know they're not eligible, and I know that people just kind of snarl their nose up and say, well, all they have to do every year is really beat Cal State Bakersfield and New Mexico State, and they make it into the tournament. I'm just wondering if a guy like Jerry Palm, there's two guys. There's Jerry Palm and there's Joe Lenardi, okay? These are the two guys that end up looking at every last bit of the NCAA tournament and March Madness and all that stuff. And we're a couple weeks away. Eric's going up to Vegas for the Pac-12 tournament. And I'm going to talk to Jerry about some of the things on the college basketball front. So look forward to visiting with him. I didn't see much of the Suns game last night, because I knew the end result, but I was very pleased to see, as I finally turned it off at the end of the first quarter, they were down 19. Eric, it's pretty evident to me that they're not going to win another game. If they do win a game, it's just dumb luck at this point. It's actually just dumb if they win a game at this point.
They have to win another game, don't they?
You think?
One game over the next, what are we in, the end of February, so you have March and part of April.
Yeah, but they're really bad.
They're not going to win another game for almost 2 months.
So here's one for you. Friday or Thursday night, Brooklyn's here. Brooklyn Suns. Would you sit courtside if you're given the tickets?
Sure.
You would sit and watch this.
If I were given tickets to sit courtside to watch an NBA game? Yeah. I'd probably, if I was given tickets to sit courtside, I'd probably watch a D-League game. If I were given tickets,
would you pay anything to watch Suns Brooklyn?
That's the rub. Yeah, I would pay. I mean, it depends. Would I pay $35 to sit courtside to watch an NBA game against for two bad teams? Sure, because the what you hear sitting courtside, because you and I have both sat courtside, is worth the $35.
No, that's true. That's true. That's a good point. I saw where Archie Goodwin was their leading scorer last night. The guy had 20 points on 6 of 19 shooting. That's just brutal. It's just like every game now. Here's the really sad part about it. I got up this morning and started going through the notes on the Suns. I'm actually now starting to look every day at what the Lakers in Philadelphia do. It's actually becoming part of my morning show prep ritual and routine. The Lakers lost a close game last night. Philadelphia has Orlando tonight. And so I think we've gotten to that point. Everybody in the audience knows this. We've gotten to that point that our team here in Phoenix sucks. They're not good at all. But we've all embraced the fact, like, March Madness this year will be fun because we're going to watch Ben Simmons if they make it that far. We're going to look at some of the top players and say, the Suns are finally going to do this. They're not going to be at 7 or 8 or 9 or 10. Like, if they win 3 or 4 in a row, that's it. They've screwed the whole thing up. This is all for naught. So keep telling Archie to shoot. I love 6 of 19 nights. I think that's great. I think it's terrific.
The Suns are going to have to really work to catch the Sixers. Well, I guess the Sixers are really going to have to work to catch the Suns, because Philly still has 8 wins, and the Suns are sitting at 14, and the Lakers are at 11. So I don't know who's on the board at numbers like, I don't know, 3 or somewhere between 4 and 3 and 6, but it's only the Suns' dumb luck that they could win 14 games and still not even have like a top 2 or 3 pick.
But seriously, aren't you going to start looking at it differently? Like, you just went through it. You just said, look, the Suns are sitting there with 14 and Philly's at 8. So tonight when the Sixers play Orlando, that's going to be the first game that I look at. I've never experienced this before. It's a whole different way of looking at sports. Let's see which teams blow the hardest, because my team, okay, well, actually, they're your team right now. They're your Suns, not mine, yours. But they have a chance of being mine if they can find a way, because with the lottery, it's not even a given that Philly would get the number one overall pick. I mean, that's the thing. It's not a given. So that's where we're at with the Suns last night. A nice, crisp 40-point loss, their worst loss of the season against the Clippers. Vontaze Burfict's on my mind today. I'm going to circle back on some basketball stuff involving the Warriors, because anybody who's debating about going and getting Kevin Durant this summer because it would screw up chemistry, are you joking? Because Golden State has the chance to go get Kevin Durant with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson this summer. We'll get into that a little bit. Vontaze Burfict spoke yesterday. And as usual, Vontaze is not really embracing that he's got to change. Now, he said some things, but he also said, well, let me just go through this. Vontaze Burfict said yesterday, and he hadn't talked since being kicked out of the Pittsburgh-Cincinnati game. Quote, I have to change my style of play. Well, it's very nice to see. I'm happy to see that he would acknowledge that. But then later he says, if I wasn't number 55, I wouldn't got a flag. So once again, it's, well, they're just looking at me. So go change your number then, if you really think that's the case. Go turn your number to, I don't know, go be 57 or something. If you're really serious about this, then take it up and hold it up and say, I have to change my style of play, end of sentence, period, exclamation point. Whether it's true or not, and it's funny because I know people that really hate the Steelers, really hate the Steelers. They're Browns fans, they're Bengals fans, that think the Steelers get the breaks. Vontaze should have been thrown out of the game. In fact, there are many times Vontaze should have been thrown out of games in the NFL. And if he's become the guy that everybody's looking at, all I can say is this stuff should have started in college. This stuff of knocking down and not being enabled as he was in college should have never happened. But because he was enabled at ASU, and this stuff has just kind of festered, it's not like he just woke up yesterday and was out of control. He was out of control at ASU. So I don't know what to make out of this other than just don't always say that, oh, well, it's because of my number and they've got it in for me. Stop it. Now, ASU, and I'm heading to the combine tonight. There's 2 Sun Devils that have been invited to the combine. Eric and I were at a lunch yesterday, and I was sitting with some people much smarter than I'll ever be, guys like Chris Cartman and others that are around ASU football. And somebody brought up the fact that only 2 Sun Devils have been invited to the combine this year, DJ Foster and Christian Westerman. And someone with Arizona State said, well, that's all you need to know. And I'm just, I hear that sort of stuff, and it's fine if that's what you believe on the inside. But seriously, then that's, I'm not going to excuse the losses that they had by just suggesting, well, we just didn't have that much talent. No, I'm not going to do that. That is the easy way to spin what was just a miserable season. You don't judge a success off of how many guys go to the combine, in my opinion. Now, if you're an Alabama fan or you're an SEC guy, you're always going to point out we had this many players go to the combine and this many players that get drafted. And I just go back to the numbers, the pure numbers that show that half of the Super Bowl roster was either drafted after the 4th round or were free agents. So draft position to me doesn't mean much of anything. Some guys get all the runs. Some guys get all the hype. Some guys know how to get owners excited about a player that couldn't play dead. We saw a quarterback come in here that couldn't throw with his right hand or left hand. It was a top 10 pick. Owner got excited. They took him. Total mistake. It happens across the NFL every year. I wish that DJ does well. We just had him in studio. I hope Christian does well. I know Christian all the way back to when he was at Hamilton. And Scooby Wright's going to be there for U of A. But you can't tell me, well, the reason why we didn't have a great season is because, well, we only have two guys that are going to the combine. That just doesn't work for me. And that will never work for me. The Coyotes got jobbed last night. Domingue, the goalie for the Coyotes, they looked like he had his glove on top of it. And I was watching this because Ovechkin was playing. There are certain guys that will make me stop. Ovechkin is one of those guys that makes me stop. And he scored again last night. We only get to see him once a year, but I thought they got screwed. The Coyotes did on a call last night, and they play at Tampa tonight. Trade deadline is next week. Mikhail Boedker not going to be here much longer. Is Mikhail Boedker going to be shot out of here? That's what it sounds like. So we'll see on that front. All right, up next, Pedro Gomez, ESPN baseball insider and analyst. We'll talk about all things Cactus League, Major League Baseball. The commissioner gave a state of the state yesterday that Pedro jumped in on. And all these Diamondback ties, Craig Counsell, Brian Price, Andy Green, Bob Melvin, all there yesterday. Pedro's next.
It's time to talk Arizona Diamondbacks and Major League Baseball with ESPN insider Pedro Gomez. Here's Brad Sesmat.
Always good to catch up with Pedro Gomez, ESPN baseball analyst insider. We saw Pedro yesterday at the general manager and manager get together over at the Biltmore. Is it just me or did you notice this too, that guys like Craig Counsell, Brian Price, Andy Green, Bob Melvin, all have something in common, and why we've had a revolving door here? What's the Diamondbacks? 18 years old, 19 years old. We've had all those guys roll through here. And now they're all managers. I think that speaks well. On one front, on another front, it's like, what happened? Why are these guys leaving?
Well, I mean, in Counsell's case, you know, he was a front office guy with the Brewers who got put into the manager's seat last year. Andy Green, the club thought so highly of him. But, you know, he had an opportunity, and Chip Hale did very well in his first year. So, you know, Bob Melvin is the one that probably sticks in fans the most because he's such a highly regarded manager in the game, and really the reasons for firing him are still, you know, still don't sit well with a lot of fans, and that's the one that probably hurts the most to a lot of D-back fans.
You are out of Camelback Ranch. Of the spring training facilities, that is my least favorite one because it faces right into the sun. I don't know who decided to build that, but that's what they did. I don't want to pound away on this, but what is your least favorite and most favorite spring training facilities?
Ooh. You know what? I used to really like Phoenix Muni because it was still the old school spring training facility. And I don't mean when they renovated it. I mean going back to before it was renovated. So I always liked that because it gave you the feel and the sense that this was what spring training was like in the 50s. So there was always something that really struck me as being like in a special place like that. But, boy, in terms of favorite, man, it's hard to go against the D-back Rocky place at Salt River. They did a really, really good job there. Everything is geared toward the fan. So I like that one a lot. I'm not just saying that cause I live here. They did an excellent job. They saw the flaws in everybody else and decided let's not make any similar mistakes, like facing the sun for the fans here at Camelback Ranch. So I like that one a lot. Least favorite, probably Surprise, but not because it's a bad facility, only because from Ahwatukee to Surprise is a long way, Brad.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I'm curious about the health of the Cactus League versus the Grapefruit Circuit. Is it just a matter of time, Pedro, before Florida has everybody come here, or teams like the Yankees and Mets just always going to say, we're not coming to Phoenix or to Arizona, it's too far away?
I don't see any changes whatsoever right now. I think it'll stay half here, half in Florida. I think that's healthy. You can't oversaturate the valley here with 20 or 24 clubs at the same time. I think we're probably at the maximum that we should be here in the valley. Florida is obviously not as good. You talk to players, and once they do both, they absolutely love spring training in Arizona because you just get more free time as opposed to riding on a bus or a van for 3 hours between facilities sometimes. But in terms of capacity, I really can't see the Valley taking on any more clubs. Not because they can't build the facilities. I just don't know that the fans will continue to fill up the parks the way they do for the most part. Because, you know, the Cubs, I think, is the biggest one in all of baseball, whether it's Florida or here. And they're sold out for the entire spring.
Right.
Now, that is the Cubs. They hold a special place. You know, you can always get tickets to Brewers and A's and things like that, Reds or Indians. But I think when you look at capacity, when you look at fan interest, it's probably right at its point where it should be.
ESPN baseball analyst insider Pedro Gomez with us. He's out at Camelback Ranch today, a good Valley resident, good friend as well, as he's looking at the Dodgers today. I'll get over to the Diamondbacks in a second. One question on the Dodgers. So the biggest question's got to be Puig, right? I mean, Dave Roberts comes in as a new manager, but Puig's weight, what does Puig look like? That's the biggest question, right?
Well, he's the wild card. I mean, obviously they lose Greinke, and they're putting Scott Kazmir into that number two hole behind Kershaw. But the wild card is Puig, because if Puig plays the way he did 3 years ago when he was that just tornado of a player who could not be stopped by anybody, then the Dodgers could win 100 games. I mean, Puig has that kind of talent. But if Puig does what he did last year where he was hurt and just looked like he had regressed, you know, there are advanced scouts that know how to pick through holes, how to pick through swings, how to expose flaws. And as a player, it's your job to, in turn, react to those movements. And it looked like, and in talking to people that are scouts, they said Puig just did not handle that well at all. If he handles that, if he is anywhere near the tornado of a player that we saw a couple of years ago, then the sky's the limit for the Dodgers. However, if he hasn't learned that, then this is a club that very well could finish in third place, because really the rotation, there are question marks. Scott Kazmir, you know, got traded late in the year last year to the Astros, was expected to be a big piece to help them get into the postseason, and it just didn't happen the way that the Astros thought it would or could. And so he's a big question mark as well. And, you know, whether Hyun-Jun Ryu will be back healthy or not, another big question mark. You know, Alex Wood is in the rotation probably to start the season, but the rotation's not what it once was here for the Dodgers. So they've got a lot of questions, and it right now, if I had to pick right now, I would probably put them in third place.
Wow. On the Diamondbacks end, so yesterday I talked to Chip and Stu, and as you did as well, but you have a much closer relationship with them, and they were both raving about Greinke and how he has already immediately taken control of the room in terms of leadership, and that they were very pleased about that. Stu said it was not even an unknown coming into the spring how he would respond. Are you hearing the same things? And what does this mean, having Greinke? What have you heard about him so far?
It's actually surprising, because when he was a younger pitcher with the Royals, that was not his MO at all. He just wanted to blend into the wall. And here with the Dodgers the last few years, he was fine having Kershaw be the leader. And that was not a role that he really desired. But obviously there's something there. Now, in talking to former teammates of his, I will tell you that a lot of them come away shaking their heads in terms of he is one of the smartest human beings they've ever run across. Forget that he's a baseball player. You know, he comes across a little odd because he's had issues in the back with social anxiety in his years past and things like that. So he may not come across quite as what the real deal is. And you're right. In talking to Dave Stewart yesterday, that was kind of a pleasant surprise that they have gone through that, hey, this guy is ready to be a leader. And, you know, sometimes these things happen at an older age. I mean, he's now in his early 30s. He's no longer 24, 25, and he's not in the shadow of a Clayton Kershaw. So that may be an added bonus that the Diamondbacks never even expected that they're going to be able to capitalize on.
Do you think that Randy has any input on Greinke? And I'll just put it up from this standpoint. I was out there on the first day. I'm standing there talking to Randy. As soon as Greinke walks by after stretching, Randy makes a beeline, goes out on the field and kind of follows him around, then is watching his first session. Do you think there's been any conversation between those two?
I'm sure there have been, and boy, I would love to hear what those are.
Right.
Because, you know, Randy during his day was not a take charge of the rotation type of guy. He just wanted to pitch every 5 days. Just leave me alone. I'm not here to coach. I'm here to just pitch every 5 days. That's all I want to do. But it's funny to hear Randy now in a role where he is a mentor, where he is somebody that is handing down knowledge, because that wasn't really what he did as a player. And it's not that different than a lot of star players. Barry Bonds didn't pass down all of his knowledge to younger players. Roger Clemens, likewise. I mean, you know, the big star guys, they kind of kept their own secrets to themselves of the bigger stuff. And I would say that it's interesting that both Johnson and Greinke are having those conversations. Don't forget that Greinke's at an age where, when he was probably a teenager, was when Randy was in his heyday. And if you're a pitcher in high school or when you're 14 years old, whatever, you know who the stars are, and you're watching those guys very closely. So I don't doubt that Greinke was a big Randy Johnson fan as a teenager.
All right, before you go, you just jarred my memory here. Are you going? Am I going to see you at Marlins camp with Barry? Is that on your spring training agenda?
No, we were thinking about doing it last week, and logistically it just didn't work out. So, I mean, I assume at some point, yes, but not likely at Marlins camp, no.
How would that go for you and him? How would it go?
You know what? We saw each other a couple of years ago when he was with the Giants at doing his guest instructor week. And believe it or not, it was far better than you would have imagined. And I even told him at the end, I said, well, where was this guy, you know, 8 years ago when you were here? And it was just nothing but antagonism. And he said, Pedro, you know, I'm older and I'm not playing anymore, so we're good. And I probably made some mistakes that, you know, I wish I could take back, but I can't take them back anymore. So I was blown away and pleasantly surprised at how cordial he was now that his career is over.
Yeah, no offense to you, but I want to see you sitting with Bonds. That's a Sunday night. That's a half hour made for because, seriously, that's... Pedro walks into the clubhouse and Barry doesn't know that Pedro's coming. I just want to see that initial, what would that be like? And I don't, it sounds like it'd be great, but I think it'd be really interesting given.
No, who knows, Brad, it may happen.
Yeah. All right. Get out of here. I appreciate your time as always. Yeah. Thanks. See you later. Here's Pedro Gomez.
No problem, Brad. Take care.
All right. Pedro Gomez there. Who would not want to see Eric? We'd want to see that, right? We'd want to see Bonds and Pedro. That's easy producing. That's a made for coming up Sunday night, a sit down that you'll want to see Pedro and Barry reunited. And it feels so good.
Yeah, I'd be all for that. I would definitely watch that.
Yeah, it'd be great. Jerry Palm is next. CBS Sports Insider Bracketology around the March Madness and U of A. Pac-12 and just the national scene. It's getting close enough now. Let's start focusing in with Jerry Palm. That's next.
Like our Facebook fan page for unique Arizona sports content from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/sports360AZ.
For tomorrow, we'll be joining you from Indianapolis with the NFL Combine. I'll be doing the show right there at the Combine. The Cardinals are speaking tomorrow morning. Bruce Arians and Steve Keim. Brad Sismath with you. We'll be at the Combine Wednesday and Thursday, then back on Friday. We'll turn our attention now to March Madness. Jerry Palm is with us. And look, here's the thing on Jerry. Jerry's been on with us before. He is terrific. Jerry Palm reader. Go over to cbssports.com/collegebasketball/bracketology. Every day he has content that is up. I mean, he works really hard at this and has it day in and day out. Of course, we're excited that March Madness culminates in Arizona next year. We had Jim Nantz on earlier talking about that. And that we're looking forward to having the madness of March come in. Jerry, thanks for jumping on board with us. Let's start with U of A. You have them right now as a sixth seed in your latest bracket you put out last night. What are you seeing out of the Wildcats? What's it going to take for them to move up other than just wins?
Well, right. I mean, that's what it is. And really the thing that's holding them back is that they only have two top 50 RPI wins. Those are the only two teams they've beaten that are a sure thing to make the tournament. And actually, Oregon State might be stretching that definition of sure thing. And, you know, gosh, you know, it's actually one of the more remarkable things. You know, they're in a league that's got six other top 50 teams in the RPI besides Arizona, mm-hmm. and that they're in first place having only beaten two of them. But, you know, that's, you know, the Pac-12 is a really good league. So for Arizona, I mean, that's the weakness in their resume. You know, they don't have any bad losses. They don't even have that many losses. It's just a team with a, you know, with a gaudy record that doesn't have a whole lot backing it up at this point. And, but, you know, their next three games at Colorado, at Utah, home Cal, all top 50 teams, you know, and then you get into the conference tournament. I mean, plenty of chances to improve on that.
And I think even at the start of the year, there was a lot made in Tucson and people that follow U of A that their non-conference schedule this year was not as good as we've seen in years past. And now that is coming to bear what you're seeing, right?
Yeah. And in fact, it's below 200 in the rankings. So yeah, that's not very good. It's the kind of thing that would really only be a problem if you were near the cut line, and that might give the committee a reason to leave you out of the tournament entirely. But in a sense, it is holding them back in terms of seeding because they didn't play the kind of quality opponents, and then of course beat those opponents. And you know, Providence beat them it must have been a tournament, I assume. And you know, they won at Gonzaga, but Gonzaga hasn't been as good as expected. But that's pretty much it in terms of, you know, quality non-conference opposition this year.
You look at the Pac-12 and you've got Utah up at a three line, and the depth of the Pac-12, you've got Washington as one of the last four out. How high can they go this year in terms of seeding? If Utah's at a three right now, in your view, they could get to a one with as much chaos as there's been this year, where every other week it feels like there's a new number one outside the last couple with Nova.
Yeah, right. Well, and you know, in terms of number one seeds, there's four of those, and it seems like one of those is losing, you know, every other day.
Right.
Yeah, you know, while Oregon is my highest seeded team in the Pac-12, they're a two. So the path for them to get to a one is a little easier than it is for Utah. But, you know, certainly those two teams, and really, you couldn't rule out Arizona if they won all the way out and beat some good teams on the way. You know, end up with I guess at that point, it's probably something like, I would guess, 30-5 or something close to that, right? You know, you only have five losses and you beat a bunch of good teams on the way to doing it. You're beating them away from home. Most in, you know, really other than the Cal home game, it would be all away from home. You couldn't even rule out Arizona making that kind of a run.
Talking with Jerry Palm, CBS Sports. Go to cbssports.com/collegebasketball/bracketology with Brad Sussmat. I want to ask you one question. It's really off the beaten path, but we're starting to see it here. We have been following Dan Marley and Grand Canyon University since he jumped on board there, and they're not eligible for the tournament this year. And I get it that in the WAC, it's only going to be one team every year, and New Mexico State's that team usually every year. But Jerry, can you just give me a feel about Grand Canyon at all and where they are as a program, and could they be a consistent March Madness team?
Well, if you can, you know, if you have a good coach and you can recruit, you know, in that league, there's always a chance, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Phoenix is a nice place to recruit to. So, you know, that helps. And you're only really dealing with one, you know, program that is traditionally good in that league, you know, year in and year out in New Mexico State. So the competition isn't, you know, it's not like you're dealing with the Big 12, you know, and all of those programs. So, yeah, I mean, there's no reason to think that Grand Canyon couldn't be successful. And I think they're showing it this year. You know, the fact that they're not tournament eligible, I suppose, is unfortunate. But, you know, there's for programs like Grand Canyon, it's a lot of it is, you know, coaching stability and being able to recruit, because a lot of times, you know, you have a successful coach, they're going to get hired away for someplace else. So,
sure.
You know, being able to have, you know, a good coach in place, you know, for, you know, in the succession, that's the hardest thing. in terms of building a program at that level is once you have success, somebody's coming after your coach, and then you've got to, you know, the next hire has got to be as good, or, you know, if it's not as good, the drop off could be precipitous and quick. So, you know, that's the hardest part, but that's the nature of, you know, being a program at that level. There isn't anything you can do to fix it other than just, you know, keep good coaches coming up the pipeline.
And what they're doing too is they played and beat San Diego State this year. They went to San Diego State. Louisville is coming to Grand Canyon next year. And so you have Jerry Colangelo. Yeah, you have Jerry Colangelo behind the scenes that is getting the they've played Duke, they've played Kentucky, they've played Indiana in the last 2 years. San Diego State is coming here next year along with Louisville. They're going to U of A next year. They're playing at U of A. So their schedule next year, and I know we're getting ahead of ourselves, but I think there's some buzz going on out here about, could we really have three programs within the state of Arizona, assuming Bobby Hurley gets it turned around, and most believe he will at ASU, that could make it into March Madness. Yeah, yeah. I mean, so I guess the scheduling philosophy of Grand Canyon, of having next year Louisville in San Diego State here at U of A, would help them in your view. A guy like yourself, I would think, would have to look at that resume closer.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, especially if they're able to win, you know, a game or two among that group, because you're talking about playing, you know, some pretty strong programs in that group. But yeah, you know, if they get a win there, especially, that's an attention getter. But, you know, the margin for error, like in terms of being an at-large, is always going to be really small.
Right.
You know, there isn't a whole lot of, you can't lose too many conference games. In fact, probably not more than one. You know, but if you do win your tournament and you got to win like that, that's the kind of thing that helps with seeding.
Before I let you go, the number ones, if you were to rank the number ones right now, 1 to 4, how do you have it?
I have them Kansas, Villanova, Xavier, and Oklahoma. And, of course, Kansas is on the road tonight at Baylor. And Villanova and Xavier play each other tomorrow. So it's pretty safe bet that by Thursday it'll be different.
Yeah, this is a big week then. Well, I appreciate your time and your insight as always, Jerry. Thanks.
Sure, no problem.
It's Jerry Palm there with us, CBSSports.com, college basketball bracketology. Yeah, I mean, the Grand Canyon thing is, it's really fascinating to me because next year, like Eric, you've been going to their games. And here's the thing, we just go. We don't sit there and have these, well, you go cover this and you go cover that. It's, what are you guys interested in writing about or shooting or telling a story about? That's how I do this. And Eric's found himself, I don't know, how many games have you gone to this year? Like half a dozen, a dozen?
Let's see. I've gone to 4 games and like 3 practices. The stories that Grand Canyon has in terms of their roster, I mean, they have 2 Australian players, a bunch of grad kids, a guy that was recruited by Wyoming and then went to a junior college, and now he's a sophomore at GCU. There are just some interesting backstories. We know Ryan Marley, Dan's nephew, is on the team. So definitely some good angles for a team that's just playing really well.
There's people chasing him, too, now. I mean, I saw the UNLV story, and I talked to some people close to Dan. They're like, that's not true. His name was a link to that. Look, I think Stanford's going to come open this year. I think Johnny Dawkins, you're starting to look around the conference and say, okay, he's on his last thread. Every year there's coaches that get moved on. I think he's in trouble. You know, Steve Alford, Eric, I'm looking at UCLA. We saw them last week. He's got a great class coming in. But teams are going to chase Dan. And I don't know what his landing spot will be or if it's going to be every year. And I don't think it's a coincidence either that in the last, I don't know, what is it, the last 2 weeks, he's done a lot of national stuff. And you got to keep your name out there. And I think he's doing a very smart job on that front. Sports360AZ.com, we partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. And tomorrow we will be in Indianapolis at the NFL Scouting Combine. Steve Keim and Bruce Arians talking tomorrow during the show, after the show. And we'll have content up on that front tomorrow and Thursday from Indianapolis. Our baseball show on Fox Sports. That's right. We have our football show on Fox Sports, and we have a baseball show that's debuting this Friday on Fox Sports Arizona and a bunch of their other regions. Brad Sussmat, Baseball AZ. Thanks for being with us. So one of the things I'm looking forward to at the Combine, this story came out about the 40-yard dash. And Adidas is putting together $1 million prize for a 40-yard dash. 40-yard dash, $1 million. That breaks the 40-yard record. So you got to hit a certain number at the combine, and if you do, you can get it done. Adidas offering NFL prospects a prize at the NFL Combine, apparel and shoe supplier giving away $1 million to anyone who breaks the 40-yard dash record. The record, 4.24 seconds, held by, Eric, do you remember? Chris Johnson. There you go. So 4.24. So there's all these guys that get it done. In 2014, there was money offered to Brandon Cooks of $100,000, the fastest sprinter at the combine who wore the company's shoes. 2015, Adidas offered Porsches to the three fastest Adidas-wearing players. However, the Porsche idea got scrapped and $100,000 replaced it. Braxton Miller has already responded in a tweet about that. The combine starts this week. And we don't get to watch those in person. So because it's my first combine, Eric Saul is taking combine duty. And, of course, I said, well, I'll go because he prodded me to go. He said, you need to go. And I'm in that space where there's certain sporting events I want to go do. I'd really like to go to Daytona 1 year. I'd like to go to the Masters 1 year. And I'd like to go to the Kentucky Derby 1 year. Those are not all at the same time, but there's certain events I haven't been to. I've done Olympic Games. It wouldn't be bad to go to another Olympic Games. It'd be kind of fun, actually, with this culture that we're in now and this content that we have and the platforms that we have. It'd be fun to go do an Olympic Games, but it's not, you know, on my bucket list. Combine is just one of those. I think I'm going to go there, and it's like going into a trade show where everybody's got like their badges on, and they're all bumping into each other, and they're all swapping cards, and I'm just not into that. I'd rather go and pick some brains of some people much smarter than I'll ever be, and there's lots of those people that will be there. So I'm looking forward to that. Golden State, we brought the story up last week. Golden State, but there's now a little bit more to it. Beating opponents by 13 points per 100 possessions. So understand that. When you're playing Golden State and they get 100 possessions and you get 100 possessions, they beat you by 100 points. That's what the analytics show. In short, they're just crushing everybody. And when they do lose a game, which is very rare, it's just one of those nights during the course of a season. They just laugh about it and they move on. And Steph Curry last night was taunting a player from the Atlanta Hawks. He just kind of laughed about it. But this conversation about Golden State this summer adding Kevin Durant or just keeping the roster as is with Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green. Really interesting to me because if we remember Oklahoma City, they ended up saying, we can't win with a big three of Harden, Westbrook, and Durant. Thus, we're going to subtract James Harden. We're going to send him on his way. James has gone down to Houston. Houston has gone down the proverbial porcelain fixture. They've not done well. Oklahoma City has still remained strong. So when you have a team that is so beholden on chemistry like the Warriors are, and they're just flat fun to watch. If you guys don't like watching the Warriors, like if you want your kids to be involved, if you're a high school player, high school coach, have them watch the Warriors. You have to have some fun in sports in this day and age. Not everything can be so serious. There's issues all over the place. You want to play football? Well, what about the concussion deal? You want to play baseball? Well, it's a really hard sport. It's year round. You want to play in the NBA? A lot of nights. Very competitive. You could go worldwide. There's not that many jobs available in the workforce when you think about it, a roster, 12, 13 players. So you have to really make it appealing to the young generation to say, why don't you come play basketball? Well, if you're not into watching the Warriors play, then I just don't think you like sports. You just, even if you're not a basketball fan, the athleticism, the sheer fun that they have, it's unlike anything that I've seen in a long, long time. It's like Magic and Showtime. If you're a Bulls fan, you'd say, well, it's like Jordan and Pippen. Jordan and Pippen were fine. LeBron is fine in his own way, but give me Showtime any day of the week. a lot of what Michael did was just because he was the first one in an age where television went to new heights. He was so great to watch in his own way, but he didn't have the greatest, in my opinion, he didn't have the greatest group around him. Look, if James Worthy didn't have Magic Johnson, James Worthy wouldn't have been Big Game James. It's just a fact. Byron Scott didn't have Magic Johnson with him. I don't think he would have been a very good player in a certain role with other teams. But when you have Magic Johnson with you, it's like, it's kind of like when the Celtics had Bird. Robert Parrish was a nobody when he was with Golden State. Nothing. Didn't do much. Wouldn't say he was a bad player, just didn't do much. Put him alongside Larry Bird, and then you throw in Ainge and Dennis Johnson and Kevin McHale, and all of a sudden you have a group that works, that clicks, and you go to a high level. In this day and age of video game basketball, Kevin Durant alongside of Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, you've got to be kidding me. Now, you're not going to have a bench at all. You're not going to be able to afford anybody. You'd have to sign a stiff like me to be out there. If I'm in the position of the Warriors, and plus, it's the Warriors. It's Steve Kerr being so smart. And the rest of that organization, they're just a very smart organization. Like, if you're the Suns and Kevin Durant becomes available, you have no shot. That's the sad part of all this. You may think you have a shot, but you have no shot. I'd love to see if Durant's going to leave, why would we not want Kevin Durant in Phoenix? We can't get him. Well, we almost got LaMarcus Aldridge. Really? I think you got played on LaMarcus Aldridge. You really do. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. Plenty of content up on our website right now that you can check out. High school, college, pro college, high school. Things that we see that are a little bit different off the beaten path. I like to say that we are Sprouts and Whole Foods in a world of Walmarts. Tomorrow we'll join you from the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis. And we will also have content up from there. Our football show, Brad Sismat Football AZ, will originate tomorrow from the Combine. And then our baseball show, Brad Sismat Baseball AZ, on Friday as well. Thanks for being with us.